Have you ever had one of those moments where you felt truly seen, like someone just got you on a deeper level,
Yeah,
or
definitely.
maybe sensed an unseen force, a nudge, protection, something guiding you, even subtly? Well, today we're diving deep into something that speaks right to that, the eyes of the Lord.
A powerful concept.
It really is, and we've got quite a stack of sources, lots of biblical texts, Genesis, Deuteronomy, Kings, Chronicles, Psalms, Proverbs,
Isaiah, Jeremiah, Zechariah.
and Revelation, Peter. The list goes on. Plus some really insightful interpretive writings that help, shed light on how these ideas are understood.
Right. And our mission, really, for this deep dive is to explore that omnipresent divine gaze. But more than just observation, we
Okay.
want to help you understand the active role of grace, of intervention that comes from that watchfulness.
So it's not passive.
Not at all. And then we'll get into the ministration of angels, which is often overlooked, but is really central in these texts.
Angels.
Yeah. The goal is for you to walk away with a richer, more dynamic sense of these spiritual dynamics.
Sounds good. So let's start right there with that phrase, the eyes of the Lord. When we hear that, what are we really talking about? Is it just like a cosmic CCTV?
Well, it's interesting. The sources consistently paint a picture of active, constant watchfulness, not just passive looking.
Active watchfulness.
Yeah, Deuteronomy 11:12 says, "His eyes are always upon the land from the beginning of the year even unto the end."
All year round.
Right. And Proverbs 15:3 broadens it. "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good."
Everywhere. Okay.
But then 2 Chronicles 16:9 adds this, well, dynamic layer. It says the eyes run to and fro throughout the whole earth
Run to and fro.
to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him.
So it's not just seeing, it's looking for opportunities to act, to show strength.
Exactly. It transforms it from passive surveillance into an active, discerning gaze.
Yeah.
He's not just watching, he's actively looking for ways to support those whose hearts are aligned with him.
That's a really key distinction. Okay, so if his eyes are constantly actively looking, running to and fro, what does that mean for us individually? Does it go beyond just our actions?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The texts make it clear. His awareness goes deep. Actions, character, even our
It's
thoughts.
our thoughts too. Wow.
Yeah, Proverbs 5:21 says, "For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." He ponders them.
Considers them deeply.
Precisely. And other sources elaborate, "He looketh to the ends of the earth and seeth unto the whole heavens
Nothing hidden.
nothing." It even says, "He knows the things that come into our minds, every one of them. And that all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do."
That's quite intense. Naked and open.
It is. But it's presented as deep knowledge, not just surveillance. And you see this play out in the biblical narratives.
Wick with the kings.
Exactly. People like David or Asa doing that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, versus others, Omri or Jehoiakim, who wrought evil in the eyes of the Lord. It's a consistent measure.
Tied directly to this divine awareness. Okay, so this deep knowledge, even of thoughts,
Yeah.
it could feel overwhelming, maybe even intrusive for some.
Understandably.
Is it presented just for judgment? Or is there more to it? And fundamentally, how does this relate to God being a spirit? How can a spirit have eyes and be everywhere?
That's a really important question. James White offered a helpful perspective on this. He points out God is everywhere through his omniscience, his all-knowing nature. Think Psalm 139.
Whither shall I go from thy spirit?
Exactly. But then there's John 4:24, God is a spirit. The key insight from the sources, though, is that spirits aren't necessarily formless.
Oh.
Well, angels are spirits, right? But the texts show them visiting Abram, Lot, eating, taking Lot's hands, tangible presence.
Right, they interact physically.
So the idea is that God, too, is a spirit being, but also has a personal shape. Philippians mentions Christ being in the form of God. John talks about the Father's shape. It's complex.
A spirit being with form.
And then add Revelation 5:6, the Lamb with seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent forth into all the earth.
And seven eyes, symbolizing complete pervasive sight.
That's the sense, yeah. A comprehensive, pervasive personal awareness. It's intimate, not detached.
Okay, trying to get my head around that. A spirit being, personal shape, yet omnipresent through omniscience, symbolized by these eyes. Wow. So if he's observing and intimately aware, how does this translate into, well, doing something, into active care.
Right. It's definitely not just about watching. It's profoundly about care, especially for the righteous, those seeking him.
Like Psalm says.
Exactly. Psalms 34.15 and 1 Peter 3.12 both say, "The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry prayers." His attention leads to listening, to responsiveness.
Attention and response.
Yes. And the sources emphasize that strength and grace have been provided through Christ.
Okay.
To be brought by ministering angels to every believing soul.
Ah, there are the angels again.
They're key. Think of Noah finding grace in the eyes of the Lord. It shows God's responsiveness, his active favor. It's a dynamic thing.
A dynamic interaction. So those ministering angels, are they always the go-between? Does God ever intervene directly without an intermediary?
That's a fair question. The sources do suggest direct ministry is possible, like the Father ministering directly to Jesus during intense prayer moments.
The direct connection there.
Yes, incredibly intimate. But the primary way blessings flow from God to us, according to these texts, is through the ministration of holy angels.
So that's the usual channel.
That seems to be the emphasis. When we pray sincerely, God says, "Here am I," but often in trials, the angel of his presence is near to deliver.
An angel of his presence.
Nearby.
Right there.
So while direct intervention isn't ruled out, the described mechanism often involves these unseen helpers.
Unseen helpers. Okay, let's focus there then. If angels are the primary channel, what exactly are they doing? They're unseen, but clearly busy.
Very busy. The sources depict them as constantly moving, ever moving up and down from earth to heaven, from heaven to earth. Like Jacob's ladder, right?
Yeah.
That image from John 1.51.
Constant bridge.
Exactly. And their roles are so varied. They help with our infirmities, help us resist evil.
Practical help.
Very practical. They're shown performing Christ's miracles, empowered by God. They're watching the development of character.
Watching character develop.
Yes, and weighing moral worth in the golden scales of the heavenly sanctuary. It's quite a picture.
Wow, scales.
And they're guarding us, keeping us from attacks of evil angels, protecting from harm. They observe all our course of action, ready to step in when we're weak.
Always observing, ready to help.
And this is beautiful. When someone yields to the Spirit, there's actual joy in heaven among them. They're invested.
That's incredible. So it sounds like a really close relationship, this ministration. What about the connection between us and them? Are we just passively receiving help, or is it more like a partnership?
That's a great way to put it. It is described as a partnership. Humans are called God's helping hand, and even co-workers with the angels.
Co-workers? With angels.
The idea is angels sometimes speak through their voices and work by their hands using human agents.
So they work through us sometimes.
And in doing that, we, the human workers, gain education and experience by cooperating with them. It's reciprocal.
Learning by doing alongside angels.
Precisely. And speaking of divine partnership, Zechariah 4 introduces this fascinating image, the two anointed ones.
Ah, the two olive trees. I've wondered about them.
Right. They stand by the Lord of the whole earth, their mission.
What is it?
It's to communicate to God's people that heavenly grace, which alone can make his word a lamp to the feet and a light to the path.
So they transmit grace, understanding.
Yes, a fullness of divine light and love and power so that God's people can then share that light and joy with others. It's a flow through these divine agents connected to God's presence.
A continuous flow of grace and light through heavenly and human channels. Wow. Okay, so we're not just watched. We're actively engaged with these unseen forces, part of this flow.
Mm.
But if there are unseen helpers, that implies unseen opposition too, right? This brings us to the bigger picture, the implications of all this unseen interaction. What about accountability in this, well, spiritual battlefield?
Absolutely. It definitely raises the stakes for accountability. Knowing heavenly messengers are guarding and observing.
Right.
One source says, angels are reading your thoughts, the intents and purposes of the heart, and taking cognizance of every act.
Reading thoughts again.
Yes. Imagine this image. If the veil between worlds was pulled back, we'd see an angel recording every word and deed, which we'll face again in the judgment.
A record being kept? That's sobering.
It is. And yes, there are opposing forces. Satan has his evil angels around us. And interestingly, while they can't read thoughts.
They can't, okay.
They do closely watch their words and actions. They observe behavior carefully.
So they're watching too, but differently.
Yes. There's even a mention of a heavenly council where Satan challenged Christ's position, wanting equality, but God revealed his purposes only to his son. So real conflict, real opposing agendas.
A genuine spiritual conflict happening around us.
And it's not just ancient history. It's relevant now. Like, preachers are reminded they have angels from heaven in their audience.
Angels in the pews, so to speak.
Literally, yes. And these angels are active, wanting to pour the golden oil of truth into the heart of the teacher.
The golden oil, like from Zechariah.
Exactly, that imagery. And they work to expel sin from the heart, unless, as the text puts it, the door is padlocked and Christ has refused admission.
So it's an ongoing, active spiritual reality affecting us constantly.
That's the picture these sources paint. Very much so.
Okay, so let's try to bring this all together. We've gone from God's all-seeing eyes.
Not just seeing, but actively aware, running to and fro.
Right, active awareness. Then his grace flowing through Christ.
Often delivered by these ministering angels.
Who are not just helpers, but co-workers, part of this constant dynamic spiritual interaction.
Yeah, it's a world far more interconnected between the seen and unseen than we often maybe realize.
Mm-hmm.
It shifts the whole perspective from just being watched to being actively engaged with by the divine.
Definitely. So here's something to really chew on. Considering that, according to these sources, every word, every deed, maybe even our thoughts are noted, potentially recorded by angels, and that this divine grace and help is constantly being offered through these unseen channels, these co-laborers, how might really knowing that, really internalizing that awareness of these spiritual dynamics, how might that actually transform your daily perspective, your choices?
If you enjoyed this study and would like to learn more, please go to revelationwithdaniel.com. and search for Angels Studies. You will find a growing list of this type of podcasts.